Hey guys, welcome back to That Canadian Podcast. I'm That Canadian and your host, Sam. Today is Freaky Friday, which means I get to share some of my favorite freaky stories with you. Today's episode only has two stories, but believe me when I say, sometimes less is definitely more. That second story, oh, anyways. The first story, Canyon Encounter, was posted to the Backwoods Creepy feed on Reddit by user Outdoor Soldier. And the second story, That Does It, I'm Never Going Camping Again, was posted to the Reddit feed called No Sleep by user Write Chris Write. It makes sense that it was posted to the subreddit No Sleep, because when I tried to go to sleep last night, the story was all I could think about, and it took me over an hour to fall asleep. Because the second story is so creepy, scary, because it's so scary, this is the first warning I'm going to give you right now, okay? So if you're squeamish or anything like that, you're going to want to skip that one. And as always, I'm going to be reading the stories in first person as the original posters have written them. I'm a 17-year-old guy currently living in Phoenix, Arizona. This incident took place around 6 months ago on an overnight trip into the Superstition Mountains, about an hour drive east of Phoenix. I'm not going to specify the exact trail because I've been doing this stuff long enough to realize what happens when you post stuff on the internet. Whether it's a good trail, abandoned mine, ghosts, or whatever it may be, people come flocking and usually with a lot of trash and loud music. Anyway, this particular trail I was taking was an 8-mile loop through a canyon. Pretty simple in and out overnight trip. I had planned to go with my friend, but a last minute cancel on his part left me on my own. So, with a packed bag and my car ready to go, I decided to go on my own. Between not leaving the house on time and having some trouble navigating rough forest roads, I didn't arrive to the trailhead until around 5:45 p.m., which, for those of you who don't backpack, this is a huge no-no. I had about a 4-mile hike until I arrived at my planned camping spot. And it was getting dark, fast. So I figured if I moved quickly enough, I could get at least 2 or 3 miles in before I had to find a spot. This strategy left me hiking a very dark trail on my own with about 15 miles of dirt road between me and anyone else. Hiking in the dark by itself is scary, especially for where I was and being on my own. Eventually, it got so dark that I could only see where my headlamp was pointing. And that's when I figured I needed to stop and set up camp. With using the headlamp as my only light source and trying to move quickly, I ended up in a less than ideal spot, but there were some burnt pieces of wood and the remains of a fire circle, so it looked like people had been there before, but not recently. My first priority was to get the fire going. I scanned the area around me and found some dry wood and got a fire going. I got my tarp set up and cracked open a can of chili mac I had brought for myself and was very much looking forward to eating. I was feeling good. My camp was set up and my food was on the fire. The feeling of uneasiness from the hike in had almost gone away, but it was still there. I guess it's a side effect of camping alone in a remote area. To fully understand what happened, I have to explain to you how my camp was set up. The site I had picked was a small clearing surrounded by large pine trees with a trail about 30 feet to my left. When you're in the woods and have a fire going, the fire casts a circle of light around it, and everything on the edge of the circle and past it are pitch black. I was sitting on the ground by the fire, eating dinner, when a small rock, about the size of a marble, was thrown into my camp. I looked at the tiny rock in shock, as I was positive that I was the only person on this trail that night. I immediately turned on my light and pointed it towards the area where I had seen the rock come from. But due to the density of the pines and brush, I could only see about 10 feet. I spent the next 15 minutes in disbelief as I scanned the tree line that surrounded me, searching for what or whoever had thrown the rock, not daring to stray too far from my fire that, in hindsight, offered me a false sense of security. After sitting back down and spending the rest of my time on high alert, I was able to convince myself that I had somehow kicked the rock or that it had fallen from a tree. When I went to sleep that night, I wasn't expecting the pure terror that was about to unfold. I woke to the sound of rustling leaves, barely audible if you weren't listening for them. But they were still there. Still in a sleepy daze, I listened as the rustling leaves got harder to hear, and I assumed that they were moving away from me. I went to grab the handheld flashlight that I had left next to me when I had fallen asleep, but the more I looked, the more scared I got as I came to realize that it was no longer there. I stood up in my sleeping bag and ducked out from under my tarp and looked around. I could see a light off in the woods. It couldn't have been more than 15 feet away. It was my flashlight, lying on the ground in a pile of leaves. This is one of the few moments in my life where I've almost shit my pants. The flashlight that I had left sitting right next to me when I had fallen asleep a few hours ago was now 15 feet away from me, past the tree line in the woods. I quickly slipped my boots on, clutching my knife in my other hand and keeping my head on a swivel. I weighed out my options. Stay here and wait out the night, or attempt a 3-mile hike back to the car in the dark. I figured that who or whatever was out here with me would definitely have a better advantage if I was to go out on the trail without a light. So I decided to stay at the camp and wait out the night there. Eventually, whatever it was came back. I could hear it walking through the woods. It was far off, but I could definitely hear it. It sounded like someone leisurely walking by, like they were on a stroll without a care in the world. Sometimes it would wander too far away, and I would lose the sound of its steps. But then, an hour later, maybe two, it would return, still faint as ever. This went on for about 3 or 4 hours until I heard the steps get closer and closer, until they were about 7 feet from me. At this point, the fire had gotten very small because I ran out of firewood. The footsteps stopped, and everything went completely silent. I sat there, still, for 2 hours, clutching my knife in my hand and prayed that I wouldn't hear anything else. I stayed like that until the sun cast enough light that I could see that I was alone in my campsite. I packed my things and speedwalked the 3 miles back down the trail I had taken. I arrived at the empty dirt road where I parked my car. I nearly sprinted to it as I unlocked my Subaru, jumped in, and drove away, not stopping until I put at least 20 miles between me and that place. I stopped at a gas station in Apache Junction to buy a Red Bull, but mostly to see and talk to another person. As I exited the store, I saw something written in the dust on the back window of my car. It said, "Sleep well?" A lot of weird things have happened to me on my various adventures through Arizona, but this is by far the weirdest and the scariest, so I thought I'd share it. There is a seriously deranged person living in the Superstition Mountains. Do yourself a favor and stay as far away from those mountains as you can. Warning: the following content contains mature subject matter and may be offensive to some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. I have sleep apnea. So, in order to breathe at night and not sound like a tree branch getting sucked into a jet turbine, which is how my wife describes my snoring, I require a CPAP machine. Because of this, I need to have access to electricity to power up my breathing box at night. So, even though my wife and I both love being outdoors, whenever we traveled, we had to stay in hotels or Airbnbs as a result of my breathing disorder. After 6 months of working from home and rarely leaving the house due to COVID-19 restrictions, my wife and I were both in desperate need of some away time. Of the available travel options, camping seemed like the best choice considering the pandemic. After a virtual consult with my sleep doctor to confirm that one night away from the CPAP wasn't going to kill me, we booked an overnight camping trip to Hocking Hills for a much-needed break from the four walls of our house. I can't even explain the sense of calm I felt when I pulled up to our campsite. My wife and I shared a grin as we powered off our phones and put them in the glove box. For the next 24 hours, we were going to be completely unreachable to the outside world. We set up the tent under an oak tree, not far from a small stream and the entrance marker to one of the many hiking trails. We brought poles for fishing, but once we felt the peaceful calm around us, we placed 2 lounge chairs by the fire pit and just relaxed. No phones or laptops, no texts, email updates, Zoom meetings, or news flashes pulling us back to the shit show of the world. It was quiet, I had forgotten what quiet sounds like. Without the busy updates and constant reminders, the tangled thoughts in my brain finally had space to unfurl. Tension of the past 6 months shed like a snake removing its old skin. It was the perfect escape that we both desperately needed. After dinner, we watched the fire die down to the last ember before settling into our tent for the night. There was no need for Alexa to play our usual sleepcast because we had the nearby stream sounds and the rustling breeze through the leaves overhead to put us asleep. I was so ready for bed, I hadn't even thought about how it would be my first night without my CPAP in the last 10 years. I put a breathe right strip on my nose and brought extra pillows to elevate my head. It wasn't much, but it was all I could do to keep myself from snoring. I closed my eyes, I took a few deep breaths, and settled back as I drifted off to sleep. I woke up a few minutes later, jolted awake by my snoring. Even elevated, my head had lolled back and my mouth fell open. My uvula would fall back and block off my nasal passages, making it impossible for me to breathe through my nose. I rolled onto my side. The angle wasn't comfortable, but I could breathe without obstructing my air passages. I tossed and turned much of the night, but after a while, I finally managed to fall asleep. I awoke sometime before dawn to a tickling feeling inside my mouth. I was on my back again, head lolled backwards and my mouth open to the sky. It was the feeling I used to get all the time back before my CPAP days when my mouth would get dry from snoring. I closed my mouth to swallow, then shot up in horror as I felt something crunch between my teeth. The taste was instant, bitter, sour, bile tasting. I bolted from my sleeping bag, nearly tearing through the side of the tent as I scraped my fingers over my tongue, desperately trying to get rid of the awful taste. I pulled what felt like an eyelash off my tongue, then raked my finger between my cheek and gums like I was fishing out a wad of chewing tobacco. My wife woke up and grabbed the flashlight, shining it on me. Smeared in the saliva on my face and hands were the legs and other body parts of a bug that crawled into my open mouth while I slept. At the time, we didn't know what kind of bug it was, whether it had 6 legs or 8. Whatever it was, it tasted terrible and was definitely dead. I rinsed my mouth with water to clear out the awful taste. My wife had a good laugh over it, claiming the poor bug must have mistaken my snoring for a mating call. She went back to sleep, but I stayed up the rest of the night, not willing to risk another open mouth incursion by a curious insect. Dawn arrived without incident. We did a little fishing and hiking, then packed up our campsite and headed home. Even though I was tired from the lack of sleep, I still felt recharged from our brief vacation excursion. I wish to God my story ended there. I really do. 3 days after we returned from camping, I woke up with a throbbing headache. It started at my temple and spread down the left side of my face, down to my lower jaw. Every muscle in that side of my face felt tense, like it had seized up. The slightest sound or bright light sent stabbing pain behind my eyes. I was anxious and irritable from the constant intense pressure that felt like a vice squeezing my skull. I did one of those virtual doctor visits, which was thankfully free but utterly useless, since they couldn't prescribe any pain meds out of fear of contributing to the opioid epidemic. They recommended alternating ibuprofen and Tylenol and cut back on the caffeine in hopes that the headaches would subside. In the remote doctor's expert opinion, my symptoms ticked the boxes of a migraine. It did make sense. I was under a lot of stress at work trying to manage all of my projects remotely. I started alternating meds as prescribed and hoped that in time it would finally ease the pain. Sadly, it did not. The pain and pressure in my head was so bad that I couldn't sleep. Not only that, but the left side of my face started swelling and was tender to the touch. A new symptom finally helped pinpoint the actual cause of my pain. I tossed back 4 ibuprofen and chased it with a cold glass of water. The molar on the upper left side of my mouth lit up with an intense stabbing pain when the cold water touched it, sending aching throbs of torment up through my temple. I fell to my knees, almost in tears, until the sensation subsided. My wife had seen enough and decided to take me to the emergency room. It was a toothache, the mother of all toothaches. With a definitive cause, the doctors could do something to help me. When we got to the hospital, however, we were turned away before we even got inside the doors, so the hospital wasn't letting anyone in unless they were either in immediate critical danger or were exhibiting symptoms of COVID-19. The nurse outside the emergency room doors tossed a Z-Pak into the car window and sent me home without a second look. Over the next week, I only slept in short spurts, 20 minutes tops, while sitting upright in a chair in the living room. If I tried to lay down, my head throbbed with immense pain and brought me to sobbing tears. Besides alternating Tylenol and ibuprofen, I was also alternating between hot and cold compresses on my face. The swelling went down some, thanks to the Z-Pak, but there was no relief from the pain. My regular dentist was overbooked, with a backlog of canceled appointments due to COVID-19. But after pleading with the receptionist, I was able to schedule their soonest available appointment, which was still over a month away. She promised to put me on the call list if they had a cancellation, but that list was already 10 people deep when my name was added to the bottom. The tooth throbbed and sent shooting pains up through the nerve every time I drank anything too cold, too hot, or too sweet. The nerve felt raw and exposed. Even yawning was enough to send shockwaves of pain radiating through my mouth and head. My regimen of altering pain meds was beginning to lose its efficacy, and I was near delirious from lack of sleep. Flossing provided a small relief from the pain, as did holding the tooth between my thumb and forefinger and wiggling it from side to side. These moments of relief were short, maybe a few seconds, and then the throbbing returned with the intense aching from my jaw to my temple that kept me awake at night and tormented me during the day. 2 days after taking the final pill in the Z-Pak, the swelling on the side of my face returned, bringing with it the tightness and pressure. My face swelled to the point that I could hardly talk without sounding like Mike Tyson. My wife made another desperate plea to the hospital to admit me, but again was turned away with the promise of another Z-Pak. I was beginning to lose hope that I'd ever find relief from the pain. It was at that point I decided my only recourse was to pull the fucking tooth myself. I realized this wasn't a rational decision, but 2 weeks without sleep and constant pain, I was beyond rational. I had to do something. The tooth had to go. I sent my wife to the grocery store for a tube of Orajel and some noodle soup packets. All things we needed, but mostly a way to get her out of the house so I could enact my plan. She gingerly kissed my forehead before she left. I watched her car turn off down the street before I headed to the garage for my tooth-pulling supplies. I carefully considered my dental implements, vice grips or channel locks. Both had their merits, but vice grips had locking jaws, allowing me to cinch down on the tooth without exerting any extra energy. Plus, the offset jaws of the channel locks seemed like it would be more difficult to pull straight down when I yanked the tooth. I doused the pliers in alcohol to sterilize them, then swished some around my mouth. The alcohol sent seething pain through the damaged tooth, further proof that this was the right course of action. After sterilizing, I wrapped the jaws of the pliers in electrical tape to cushion the grippers. I draped a towel over the sink and leaned over the counter so I could watch my reflection in the bathroom mirror. I opened my mouth as wide as I could and moved the pliers into place around my damaged tooth, squeezing the handle grips together. The handle clicked as the vice grips cinched in place. I let go of the pliers and they hung from the tooth in my mouth. The grip was true. I ran some floss on either side of the tooth to make certain I only had one tooth in the jaws. I gave the pliers a little wiggle to make sure they were tight enough to hold. My tooth wiggled with them, sending shooting pains up into my sinus cavity. I took a deep breath, exhaling through my nostrils. I gripped the pliers and slowly rocked them side to side. My jaw answered with a pop as I wiggled the tooth in each direction. There was no pain, or at least nothing greater than the baseline of pain I had already been living with. The pressure was still there, even as a trickle of blood dripped down the pliers onto my hand. I moved the handle of the pliers from side to side, pulling them out and pushing them in, each time a little further. I would push until I felt a pop, then I would pull until I felt a pop in the other direction, then push until I felt two pops, and so forth. After a few series of pushing and pulling, I felt a crunch up near my jaw. After that, the tooth moved more freely. I twisted it from side to side, rotating it. It felt loose, but it was still held in place by my gums and whatever ligaments were still connected to the molar. I took another deep breath. Then, as I exhaled, I placed my foot on the wall and pulled the pliers down as hard as I could. The muscles in my forearms tensed as I flexed and yanked with all my might. In my mouth, I heard a sound like a weed being ripped out by the roots from densely packed soil. The pliers nearly flew from my hands as my tooth pulled free. Ligaments and part of my gums tore away as well, still attached to the tooth and caught in the jaws of the pliers as I wrestled it free. I looked down at it, a bloodied stump of white and red nestled snug in the pliers. The pressure in my head was still there, as was the throbbing. I began to panic. Pulling the tooth did nothing. Was that the right tooth? Do I need to pull another? What was it going to take to make the pain go away? I pushed my finger into the hole left by my missing tooth, feeling something pulsing there. As I pushed down on it, I felt a small gush of fluid draining from the hole. The pressure released immediately, taking the pain with it. My mouth filled with a sensation of static as the pain washed away. I felt like crying. The pain and pressure was finally releasing. Then, I looked down at my reflection in the mirror and screamed. The static I felt in my mouth wasn't from the release of pressure. It was spiders. Dozens. No, hundreds of tiny spiders filled my mouth and swarmed over my face. What I mistook for static was the rush of tiny legs scurrying out of the cavity left by the tooth I had just removed. The spiders poured out of my mouth, my nostrils, over my face. They filled my nose and mouth, blocking my airways. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't see. I stumbled into the shower, still dressed as I swatted my face, brushing off the swarm of legs as best I could. I held my breath in fear of inhaling them down into my lungs. I felt a throng of them pushing against the back of my throat, triggering my gag reflex. I dropped to my knees, vomiting all over myself in the shower, which thankfully helped flush the little fuckers out of my mouth and down the drain. I heaved until there was nothing left, then sucked in a deep, ragged breath. A new headache pounded in my temples as my lungs expanded, finally taking a much-needed breath. I reached out of the shower for the alcohol, throwing my head back and filling my mouth with it, swishing it around. I muffled a scream as the alcohol hit the raw meat of my gaping tooth hole, which poured alcohol into my sinuses and out of my nostrils. I swatted one last spider as it crawled down my neck. Blood poured from my mouth as the water washed over me. The pain from pulling my tooth was bad, but compared to the pain I had been feeling, it felt like a relief. I closed my eyes as the water poured down over my face. I was exhausted, but finally free of the awful pain that had kept me awake for the past 2 weeks. I didn't know how long I sat like that before I fell asleep. I awoke to my wife screaming as she found me in my vomit and blood-stained shirt on the shower floor. On our third trip to the hospital, the nurse took one look at me and ushered me inside. They cleaned up my wound, washing out the remaining infection and the baby spiders that still took refuge in my sinuses. On my tooth, they found parts of an egg sac from a wolf spider, which apparently was what I had bitten down on that night while camping. The egg sac wedged itself between my tooth and gums, creating an abscess that caused my severe toothache as the eggs grew into hatchlings. I'm currently back home, still waiting for my dentist visit to install my new tooth implant. The stitches itch a little, and I received yet another Zed pack, but I'm sleeping at night. The doctors were puzzled as to how I managed to get an egg sac of a wolf spider lodged in my mouth like that, but after doing a little research, I think I found the answer. Male wolf spiders make a purring vibration noise to attract females. I found a recording of this purring noise, and after listening to it a few times, I played it for my wife. When she heard it, she nearly passed out from laughter. I'd be goddamned if that sound wasn't identical to the one I make during an episode of sleep apnea. So yeah, my snoring attracts horny spiders. Ugh. That story was just awful. It included two of my biggest fears. Not fears, I guess, but things that just creep me out. One, anything involving teeth. I absolutely hate anything involving teeth. Two, I have this deep-seated fear that that exact situation will happen, where spiders or some kind of bug will nest itself somewhere inside my head and or body, for that matter, and then the babies will just, like, the egg sac will burst and the babies will just come crawling out all over me. Ugh. No thank you. No ma'am. Not interested. Ugh. Do you think I didn't like it? Do you think that story creeped me out? Anyway, I have some good news. Although, I'm not sure how much good it would do since you had to sit through the telling of the story. There was a link posted at the bottom of the story that brought us to another story explaining this one. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I'll tell you the gist of it. It was called That Does It, I'm Never Going Camping Again, Story Notes. He said the story was inspired by three truths. One, he does have sleep apnea and requires a CPAP machine to sleep at night. Two, he and his wife did go camping recently. And three, he did have a toothache and he really did have to wait a month to see the dentist. At the end of the article, he basically said that his goal of the story was to write something that would blur the lines between fiction and reality and get the reader thinking. And he thought that the worst thing that could happen was a ball of spiders nesting in your mouth, which is absolutely correct and I fully agree with and have absolutely no intention of listening to this podcast after I edit it and reading that story ever again. All right, guys, that wraps it up for today's episode. What did you think of today's stories? If you're listening to this on Spotify, go to thatcanadianpodcast.ca and let me know in the comments of today's episode. If you're listening to this on the website, all you have to do is comment. Also, if you have a freaky story that you'd like me to talk about, or you have a friend that has one, again, leave a comment in today's episode on the website, or send me an email at thatcanadianpodcast@gmail.com, or send me a DM on Instagram. My handle is thatcanadianpodcast. Make sure you tune in to Monday's episode, Movie Monday, to hear Andrew and I review the movie, The Equalizer, starring Denzel Washington. This movie you have to watch on Amazon Prime, because of a perfect example of why Netflix sometimes annoys me. Netflix only has the second Equalizer movie, not the first. Not the first and second, just the second. Stupid. Anyways, thank you so much for joining me and listening to today's episode. This has been That Canadian Podcast. I am That Canadian. Floss your teeth and stay safe out there.